everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about Showstopper, where despite being like one episode from the end, a new guy is going to show up. I'm here with Liz, Miss Shadow Lovely, and Slow Beef. Hey, gang, why is there a new fucking guy?
Hello. Also, hello. Quick addendum. It's not Showstopper. It's Freak Show, colon. Freak Show. Showstopper. lest we forget, this is the one that's named the name of the season and the title of the episode. Yeah. Is Freak Show.
American Horror Story, Freak Show, Showstopper. Impossible to say in one sentence without stopping at some point. American Horror Story, Freak Show, Showstopper. Like that, yeah, that's like teach that to theater kids.
Why would you have done this?
It sounds like a TTS, like trying to read out something on like a non-optimized screen of text that it's just spitting out everything and it's not like discerning what it's supposed to be saying right now. But like I said last time, like once a season, it's not every season, but it happened in Coven too. There is one episode where they name it like the name of the season and then like an additional title. And I don't know why they do that. It's usually towards the end too. It's usually like one of the last episodes.
It's a mistake, though, I feel like, always, right? Like, there's no reason that's good. It's always just,
it doesn't look good on, like, any media. Like, it doesn't look good in streaming services. It doesn't look good on, like, an episode list in a DVD collection. It doesn't look good on, like, IMDb. It doesn't look good when you're, like, scrolling through channels with the digital TV guide or whatever. Like, I just have been trying to think if there's any format where this would, like, make sense as, like, a highlight. Which also begs the question, why would you want to highlight this episode in particular? Which I have... There isn't a reason for... There, you wouldn't.
Right, yeah. You wouldn't. Yeah.
Even the second half of the title, Showstopper, like, knowing what I know now, having seen the episode, that doesn't even make, like, any... sense, really.
Well, none of the show stops.
Yeah.
The problem is too, like, the next episode is called Curtain Call, which, you know, because it's the last episode of the season, but I feel like Showstopper is also like serves that purpose, you know what I mean? So it's just like, it's just bad all around, you know.
It's not a legal combo. You can't play a Showstopper and then a Curtain Call afterwards. Showstopper already ends the encounter.
That's too many things. Yeah. I said briefly in our notes later, and also in the group chat, that this is not the first time, nor will it be the last time that they do this. But they do this thing not every season, but I would say roughly 75% of the seasons or more, where the second to last episode they treat as like a finale. I don't think on purpose. I just think that they make too many plot lines and they're like, oh shit, ah beans. And they have to like try and get all their plot lines done. So the second to last episode always has a ton of stuff that they try to resolve at the last second, like really, really quickly. And so it feels like a finale. And then the last episode of those seasons ends up feeling like a big, weird, wet fart because like there's nothing left to do. So they're like, well, do you care what the characters are doing 6 months from now? And it's like, well, no, not really. That's not why I'm here. Really. There's no characters you've made that I'm interested in seeing where they ended up, frankly.
It's almost like they're surprised by it. It's like, you don't? I would have thought, you know, no? Oh, all right. I made all this for you and you don't even care, viewer. It's like, well, you know.
No,
you made
really.
A big dog turd and you don't want to taste it? What's wrong with you?
And, I worked on this dog turd for all day and you don't even care. And it's like, bro, I'm not, you know, I'm not married to you. It's not, you know.
And they're about to get like wildly accelerationist with needing to wrap it up in this episode.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I was mad about some unsanctimonious writing off of characters, particularly those with more of an antagonistic leaning. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm if If Dell has 1,000 haters, then I am one of them. If Dell has 100 haters, I am one of them. If Dell has no haters, I am dead and no longer walk this earth.
Right.
That being said, I was still mad at how they just removed Dell with, like, nothing. And they're about to do that shit, like, 9 times this episode. They're about to just be like, we gotta get people out of here. We gotta get this show on the road.
Yeah, they're like, look at the time.
The came. Yeah, exactly. Just like, bars closed. That's it. But
me awkwardly leaving a party, but instead of just like being like, whoo, time for me to go, I just pull out a gun and kill everyone else at the table.
Oh, like Ethel. That was what Ethel was going to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The first one that we're about to get into, that happens prior to the intro, it's not even that, like, what happens is dumb and stupid and is a lot that I'm sure that Slow Beef will have a lot to say about. But on top of that, like, it happens so quickly to the point where, like, most of it is already done happening and before you can even think, like, well, how would they even know? And then by the time that thought finally crosses your mind, the character's out of the show. So it's like, okay. But yeah, I guess to get into it. It is just absolutely bonkers bananas raining. I don't know if this is supposed to be to set the mood or why it needed to be raining for this. Well, I do know. It's because of what they're ripping off. But it's raining real bad. Stanley comes in from who knows where in his car, who knows where he was just now, and drives up and he comes inside the big tent and they're having like a big party. And I guess this was a setup, but they're doing a big party. And Elsa is like, we love you, Chester, the guy I sold the circus to with the weird puppet. Remember, I sold the circus to Chester. Certainly there won't be a conflict about that later. I definitely sold it to this guy. It belongs to him now.
Honestly, Elsa, like, she's in the wrong business. She should get into the, like, selling the Golden Gate Bridge to random people business. Yeah.
I was gonna say, like, Ponzi
selling
scheme.
Selling shit repeatedly that she never owned. That's, like, that's her calling.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely. But, because, yeah, go ahead, sorry.
No, it's, Chester is, in case anybody has somehow forgotten in the 1 week since we talked about it, the freaky puppet guy who does magic, quote unquote, and also has bees
and murdered
in his head.
His wife and his wife's lover and is both like too into puppets, but also like not always. Like there's no like magical threads binding him to the puppet. It's just like a convenient narrative puppet.
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah.
And I complain about later, like way, way later in the notes about something about the puppet, which is like, I think that the most frustrating thing about this puppet guy is that since he just kind of, you know, materialized out of thin air selling chameleons to the circus or whatever, we don't like know why he's this way with the puppet. Like, we don't know if he was like this with the puppet before the war, if he's always been like this with the puppet since he was a kid, or like what his deal is.
Well, I think, like, you mentioned it last time too, because I had assumed that they say, like, they make a lot of references, like, oh, the war made him like that, because she's, I think somebody even says, like, you came back from the war with bees in your head later on, but like in a flashback or a hallucination or something. But you pointed out correctly too that, like, during a flashback in the previous episode, he's like, I'm going in the garage to work on my magic show, implying he's been doing this for a while. So it's like, just not clear. Yeah. Like, yeah. Like what was that? Like, what was like that before? And what was like, you know, after, et cetera, or what happened since then and all that. And I don't think it's like that one. I don't think it's a good thing in the sense of like the old horror trope of like, you don't know for sure. I think they just kind of forgot or confused
it. And like, I know this show has no sympathies and, you know, does things in bad lights all the way, but there is something particularly distasteful to me of taking wartime PTSD, wartime PTSD and turning it into Wacky Wahoo puppet time. Like that, that kind of bothers me because PTSD is usually like very sad, like very like painful and slow and meandering. Like it's not a cool, fun puppet time thing.
No. Well, and it's like you know, there's also like a lot of material you could draw from and not in the usual American part.
Going up to any of my veteran friends and being like, so what kind of puppets did you get into? Yeah, after Iraq, we all got into puppets, right?
That's what you do.
My friend's head was blown apart and only ventriloquism could get me out of it. The nightmares. Like, not a sentence you hear at a lot of VA places, but...
That's what I'm saying, is like, the options are either A, he already had the puppet before he went to war, but he was like normal about it, and then like he got his shit rocked or whatever, and now he's not normal about the puppet now that he's back. B, he went and served in the war, was like fine beforehand, no puppet, and then went and served, and then came back super traumatized and was like, I gotta get my hands on a puppet. Which is an insane thing for us to assume. And then the other option is that, like, there's a third option that we just will never get closure about of, like, he grew up with a puppet or something, which would make the most sense. And then just he got really, really weird about it after the war. Like, we just
this
don't get
like
answers.
What happens if you take your comfort character too far?
My comfort character, my ventriloquist puppet Marjorie.
My ventriloquist puppet that fucking hates me.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, we get no flashbacks of like him like being with her and having a good time. It's just, no, Marjorie's fucking mean to him all the time.
It's like literally the exact opposite of the funny little goat boy smoking a blunt. Like, it's just like, what's the most opposite thing? A hateful, awful little puppet. That wants to be involved in sex, I guess.
But like, and you know what the thing is? Yeah, right? Like, the other thing is, like, too, you could almost say, like, even earlier with the, when he kills the wife and the girlfriend, like, oh, well, the puppet's his excuse or makes him do it. But, like, in this one, without spoiling it, the puppet's, like, Loki. Like, it just fucks with him and, like, ruins things for him. But it's like, but you don't want that. Like, not subconsciously or anything. The puppet's just an asshole. Like, it doesn't, like, why? Why are you doing this to yourself? We'll never know.
Yeah, usually, like, with expressions like that in horror, where they try and, like, separate into two characters, the whole, like, thing is, one is the id and one is the ego, right? Like, that's kind of the expression of it, is they are, like you said, they're still the same character. The puppet's not real.
Right?
You know, it's like, it's still him. So they should have a unification of purpose of some semblance, but alas, poor Yorick, he took a bombshell to the head and believes in puppets, I guess.
Yeah, and it's like, what, maybe the puppet is, you know what I mean? That's just, I feel like the way they do it, it's just like in the writer's room, like, how about the puppet could be supernatural or something? We don't know. We're not going to say. And it's like,
yeah, we won't investigate it. We won't investigate it or give you any clues either. Also, this means that this is yet another instance of them. They love doing this specific thing. And I'm not going to call it a trope because I've literally never seen any other show besides American Horror Story do it, which is making people have daydreams or hallucinations in which they are getting owned. Like, people don't do that usually. They don't like, you know, they don't imagine an imaginary friend that like kicks their ass. Like, that's not what people do typically. That's not like the human condition.
I feel like every other show does all of these things so much smarter. I mean, like, every show, you know, like, you could even say, like, maybe there's an anxiety thing where something like that happens. But in American Horror Story, shit just happens, you know, like, no rhyme or reason. It's just like, we need it to happen. Sometimes not even for the plot. Sometimes just because, yeah, you know what, why not? Shit happens. So it's just, so, it just does.
Also, there's a lot of times where they'll have a character, like, undergo a ton of trauma that would almost certainly just make the person, like, shut down. That's, like, how people get when they're super overwhelmed, is they just kind of collapse on the ground a little bit. Like, it happens.
Yeah.
And instead they're like, what if they turned into a whirlwind of blades? Like, what if they turned into Raiden Metal Gear Rising whenever they got sad? I mean, mean, I guess, man. What if they went crazy and killed a bunch of ladies at a Tupperware party instead of, like, being depressed normally? Like, I guess?
What if your mom said you couldn't be an actor, so instead you became a weird puppets guy and also a serial killer who also was a clown one time, and that didn't work out, so he was eight other things later?
Hey, guys, can we change Dandy again? I have an idea I wanted to rip off from another movie I saw. Like, yeah, well, yeah. Go for it.
We got another episode. We got another episode. Throw him in there. See what happens.
We're getting paid either way. It's fine.
Yeah. So we're at the circus, and we're having a celebratory dinner over Chester buying the circus. Yeah. They have a little bit of a back and forth. Chester stands up at the end of the table and does a puppet joke about how, oh, we won't miss this sauerkraut, and like the whole thing of Marjorie German, actually being rude, and Chester being like, oh, no need to be so rude.
Marjorie, what the hell? Yeah, but...
Yeah, after this pointless exchange of the worst puppeteering you've ever seen, Elsa goes... All right, and for our next part of this celebratory banquet, I'm going to need everyone who's part of the old guard to stay, and everybody who's part of the new Chester Circus, who only got added when Chester got added, to leave. But- and then everyone turns and looks at Chester, and he goes, what? He's like, they're like, you need to go. Only you. You need to walk out of the room right now. And he's like, oh, okay.
But like, just like,
by the way, Stanley is sitting at the head of the table, just like, yum da dum dum dum. I love my huge cock and my gay porn. I love to eat a little veal with the team.
But like, also, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, Chester's never like, just because he's holding the doll during the dinner and the toast, but like, he never holds the doll inappropriately. Like, even when the doll has to watch him fuck, like, it's sitting somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is the only time I think he's ever just like, I have to have the doll in my hands for the ventriloquist act that I'm not doing. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yep, right now I'm inextricably linked to the doll like other horror tropes, but it's like, but this is the only time, so whatever. That just annoyed me.
Yeah, it would be extra weird then, because like, all the times that the other people have like walked in on him quote-unquote talking to himself, like, they don't see the doll because the doll's like sitting in a chair across the room or like in a box or whatever. So like, he's really kind of brought it out like it's a special occasion in their eyes, which I think is weirder. I think it would be weirder if like a guy I knew who did ventriloquism just like showed up to a special event and had the doll suddenly. I'd be like, oh, weird choice. Very strange decision to bring that to this, but okay.
Hey. Well, thank you for wearing your black tie and your tuxedo. Didn't need the doll. Did not need the doll.
You know, I'll just, while we're here, can I talk about something else that annoys me a lot? So,
yes.
Okay. Because they're like, let's talk about the night we're going to have. We're going to have a feast. And, you know, Stanley, this is all thanks to Stanley in a way, too. I'm going to go off to Hollywood and I'll send for all of you and you'll all be there, says Elsa. And we're going to watch a movie. And one of them says, not Signs of the Cross, which I can't remember if that was the Asylum reference
for no reason
or not.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, it was. Because then she's like, no, not that movie, wink to the audience. We're going to watch Freaks, the night...
Yeah, which, so this is the most insane thing for American Horror Story to have done. It feels like they were just like, got you, critics. We know about the movie Freaks. We knew the whole time. And I don't know about you, Beef, but I was just sitting here like, I know, man. You ripped it off nonstop. How could you have not seen it?
It's wild. The whole thing is wild because, they just, like, before when they rip off of movies, they're like, at least I guess trying to kind of get away with it. And here they're like, they're almost taunting you, like, you've never seen Freaks, have you, audience? But then, crazily enough, they're like, oh yeah, I can't wait to see that movie. And then they describe the plot of it. Like, each of them has a little bit. Like, it's about a trapeze artist who wants to, like, trick this little person in a carnival sideshow out of his inheritance. So she pretends to love with him. But then they find out about her and she gets her comeuppance and stuff. And it's like, so you've already seen it. So there's like, this is completely unrealistic, but whatever, fine.
This would also be like the main character of The Truman Show, like sitting down and putting in a copy of the film The Truman Show.
Yes.
Like, insane.
Yes, absolutely. And it's all, and the craziest part then is like, this is probably my cue as Stanley to be like, hey, something really fucked up's going on here. I should probably get out of here. That would be smart of me. But Stanley's like, sounds like a hit, which, by the way, it wasn't. It flopped. But, you know, so they're like, no, Stanley, why don't you stay? You know,
I just can't imagine the writers being like, no, no, no. We need them to know that we did see the movie we're ripping off. Like, why would you do this? why would you have everybody be like, hey, have you heard of the thing we're ripping off? Yeah.
And, like, what I hate is, too, because, like, they just take something wholesale from it later this episode. Like, absolutely just, I'll just borrow this from your movie. Is that cool? 1934 movie? And tell you about it. It's so brazen.
It's because they want it to be, quote unquote, an Easter egg instead of them just like ripping something off. So they're like, it's a wink, 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 wink. It's a nod. See, we mentioned Freaks. And at the end of it, ooh, a thing that ties into Freaks. See, we're not ripping it off. We're in on the joke.
It's a wink and a nod with the subtlety of a drop kick. Like, it's really brutal.
It's so bad. Yeah. No, it's so bad. It makes me spoon. And the other
thing, are you ready to kill a random woman? So everybody, go ahead, Beef.
No. Cause they're like, yeah, that's right. Cause then they're like, don't worry, Stanley, before you go. Cause Stanley's like, I should get out of here though. I'll let you to it. And they're like, no, we got you a present. Check it out. And they bring over a big wrapped box. It's a giant wrapped box. And in it, oh no, it's the museum curator's head. Which is like, wait, what? Like, she wasn't in on it, but okay. So, oh my god, they killed her. And then, like, and then American Horror Story has the balls to be like, so I know you're the idiot, so let's go to a flashback and we'll show you Desiree and Maggie killing her. So we go back to, like, you know, when Maggie's, like, passed out after seeing Jimmy's hands in the museum.
Yeah, and then the nice old lady is just like, oh, yeah, you know, people get sick sometimes. Or I've even seen people get a little bit, you know, white in the face. I've never seen one full-on faint before, though. I hope she's okay. Well, anyway, I'm going to lean over and make sure she's okay and expose my back. Nobody let her open me, okay? And then Desiree's like, time to get letter opened.
Incredible.
And these two, that means it's Desiree and Maggie who killed her. Which, first of all, that lady, like, didn't really do anything wrong. She's just running a museum.
Is Desiree going to be the villain of the next season? Because she's just killing people, like, really fast without thinking too hard about it.
And then decapitate her afterwards. Like, that's like a step above just killing somebody.
Yeah. Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's like playing with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, and the thing is, Desiree also acts like, yeah, we're all in this together, like getting rid of our old enemies and stuff, especially later on. And it's like, didn't you just arrive kind of recently with Dell? Like, you're not part of the original crew. Like, what the f- like, I think Stanley was here before you, actually.
Yeah.
That is true. Yeah. So they just, like, murder this woman who didn't really do anything wrong. Like, she runs a medical exhibit museum.
Yeah. Like, if anything, maybe her bosses who are funding this need to have a very strong discussion about the ethics of hosting human body parts on display. But she was just like a bookkeeper and like a museum guide. Like, yeah, it was. This is fucked up. This lady did not deserve this. There's a long list of people that are systemically enabling this to happen, and she is none of them.
That's it. And the thing is, like, they can't even know that or not know that. Because she had that one line to Stanley that was like, listen, you know, if you had some samples, I wouldn't ask too many questions. But A, I don't think that implies, so if you can kill some sideshow carnies and bring me their body parts, that's good.
You know, Stanley's like, I got you. I'm picking up what you're putting down. I'll be back in a couple of months with some dead bodies. Yeah. And she's like, what?
Because, like, if Jimmy or Stanley told me that, I'd be like, I didn't mean that, you sick freak. Like, I gotta call the cops now. But
I meant you should glue antlers on a jackrabbit. Not that you should kill a bunch of people. Don't kill a bunch of people in Florida.
And second of all, in the off chance she actually did mean that, Maggie and Desiree have no way of knowing that. You know what I mean? They're just killing her.
Yeah, they don't know.
Desiree,
they don't even know who she
Desiree
is.
Desiree hungers. Yeah.
This is just a random lady they murked for no reason. They were just like, well, she's in the building where the hands are. So she's clearly to blame for this. She's gotta go.
Congratulations. You didn't know this? You're a figurehead now. Sorry. The bad news.
The price is death. Goodbye. Yeah. And Stanley doesn't love it, admittedly. He doesn't, like, react super great to it. And
I think the funniest reaction that the American Horror Story writers could have done, and they totally missed on this, is just to have him go, "Who is that?" Yeah. It's like, who is that character? Who is this? What? Like, clearly it's someone from the Modern Museum. I get that, but who is this?
Yeah, I've never seen this woman before in my life.
And wouldn't that have tied into, like, kind of who he is as, like, this con artist? And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it would have been a smart thing for him to do, and blah, blah, blah.
He just sees her as a transactional point. Yeah. Not really a person.
This is what I meant when I said that, like, by this point in the scene, I had the thought of, like, wait, did I forget when they found out that Stanley did this? And then I remembered, like, wait, no, they don't ever, like, establish that our characters know. It's just that you're supposed to assume that, I guess, that she
spilled the beans.
Yeah, that Maggie. But they don't show that or, like, mention that. They're just like, we'll figure it out.
Later on, they have a couple characters be like, if this little lady hadn't spilt the beans, we'd all be in a big pickle. And it's like, I don't know. Stanley didn't seem to be getting a lot done.
Well, and that's the other thing. It's like, at what point would, Stanley, who's so committed to this whole, like, elaborate bit that he's done of building this fake identity as a Hollywood guy, like, he doesn't even try to refute it. He doesn't even go. The next scene, Jimmy has more pushback against what Maggie says than right now. What Stanley, given what we know, would probably be like, you're believing the woman who says she's a psychic? Like, he doesn't even, like, try to, like, sow doubt in the minds of the people he's been manipulating. He just immediately is like, oh, no, you got me, I guess, probably.
And he knows they're going to kill him, probably. So you'd think he'd at least try. Like, he does, like, a little, like, hey, Elsa, you want to go in the back and talk about this? And that's, like, kind of it. But, like, and then
Amazon Eve punches him in the chest so hard he explodes into a cloud of gay mags. And that's it. And then he's gone.
And you know what's even wilder, too? Remember how Stanley had a gun through this, like, whole fucking show?
No, he forgot. He doesn't feel like it, yeah.
Like, you should... What a time not to bring it, you dope! You know, like, Jesus.
That's his penis shooting gun. No one that's attacking him has a penis, I don't think. Maybe. I don't know. I wasn't paying too much attention to
this scene.
I'm doing,
like, a mental audit, which is interesting. Yeah. But, like, yeah, it's like, yeah.
Okay, wait. Does he? Can his enchanted gun that can only shoot dicks shoot big clits? This is really relevant right now.
I mean, it was worth a shot. He should have tried, at least.
Should have tried, yeah. Ooh. Worst comes worst, like, the bullet reflects and hits him in the head, but he's dying anyway.
Yeah.
So it hits him in the
pocket and all his gay porn spills out. It's like, ah! One for the road.
So they slap Stanley up on the spinning knife throwing board, which it's like, oh, okay, they're going to kill him with the knife board, like Elsa something. Okay, she's at least done this before. And then she, like, throws three knives at him. They all miss but are close. And then she's like, okay, now that you're scared, let's get you down from that board.
Right.
All right, everybody, stab him. Okay, you should really start running. It's like the most confusing way to kill somebody. Like, if I was Stanley, I'd be like, oh, okay, whew, you were just teaching me a lesson. I guess that's fair. And they're like, no, we are going to kill you. The board was just the fuck with you, but we are going to kill you now.
That was like literally the writers going, oh, whoa, wait, we didn't rip off Freaks. Sorry, wait, can't kill him with a knife. Sorry, take him down. Like,
because he has a knife. When he comes down off the board, like, he has a knife. He's injured, but he has a knife, one of the throwing knives, and he's, like, trying to, like, defend himself. I'm like, he would definitely, like, get a couple of you, like, pretty good. Maybe not kill you, but he could fight back. But they don't even have him do that. They have him, like, scamper away. Like, he has no chance of fighting back whatsoever. Yeah. He's like, I gotta go. And then they chase
him down. The danger of fighting with, like, knives and guns and shit is that, like, even someone who's wildly unskilled can flail at you and cut a ligament, right? Like, that's the whole thing. And, yeah, he's just, like, kind of limping out with a knife, shaking it at no one as they all slowly, like, encircle him. And then he's just like, oh, I guess I lose.
Yeah, but before he does, though, he's like, he like leans down specifically to Susie, legless Susie, and is like, she killed Ethel. She killed Ethel. Elsa, she killed Ethel. And then he runs away.
You guys believe me, right? You know, like
I'm like, what a weird like Hail Mary. No other like form of pushback whatsoever, except for when he's about to get owned, being like, "But she did it too." Like, I don't. That's
see?
Not even like a
see. Are you any better than me, Elsa?
It has to be spite, right? Because like it doesn't help him. Like it doesn't help him in this scenario because Elsa's not the one who delivered the information that has condemned him. It's Maggie who's delivered that information. So like he doesn't need to discredit Elsa.
This makes more sense in like the very next scene when as he's running. Yeah sorry.
Oh no, I was just going to say, I mean, this is literally the whole reason this is here is because they need to have an inciting reason for everybody to turn on and decide to kill Elsa. That's the whole reason.
Yeah, exactly. Because like what happens is once he's down off the board, which is wild, then Elsa throws a knife that hits him in the leg and she's like, run. And then he like kind of like says, he says like, you know, the thing like that Elsa killed Ethel. And then he runs, but there's people coming from the one direction, and he comes back in. They're coming from the other, and they're surrounding him. And oh no, there's nowhere for Stanley to go. And they kind of encircle him, you know, menacingly. And that's it's the intro. So we're not totally sure what happens, except we know for sure they kill him because why wouldn't they? But you know, yeah, sure, tension, I guess. So
why didn't he run to the car? He came here in a car. We saw it. It was in the first scene.
Oh, yeah.
Like, didn't he run to go get his gun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, very impressive that the freaks were able to, like, corner him, given that they left after him and were behind him in this specific pursuit. Very, feels like they practiced this. It's almost, almost impressive. But yeah, then the intro plays. Ta-da!
And we lead immediately into one of the top two scenes I almost reflexively skipped over because I forgot I have to watch all of it for a podcast. Because I was just like, I don't want to watch this next scene. I could tell from the second this scene started, I wanted nothing to do with it. There are two of them in this episode, and this is the first. So Jimmy's in the shed, dee-da-dee-da-day, and Elsa tells Jimmy, hey, we had to kill Del because he killed Ma Petite. And Jimmy then, like, starts flailing around and he's like, but he's my father and I forgave him. I'm Jimmy. I love forgiving people. It's my favorite thing. Of course I forgave Del. He's my dad. And he's, like, really mad about this. And then I can't even remember why Maggie comes up.
Because, like, Elsa has her there because, like, Maggie's going to change your bandages and take care of you, which is, like, that seems like a poor idea because Jimmy is just like, oh, Maggie, my God, mad at her.
And for what it's worth, like, if in a real universe, it would make sense because they were, like, still in love with each other and Maggie had clearly told Jimmy, like, 45 plus times, hey, you should go, Stanley's going to try and cut your fucking hands off. And then he's just like, I can't believe that deceitful slut never told me about Stanley wanting my hands.
Quite literally, that is the most infuriating part of this whole sequence, is that he is like so angry at Maggie and is like, this is all your fault. And I'm like, she literally is maybe the only hope you had of not getting her hands cut off, truly.
Yeah.
Like, if on a scale of culpability, that's 0 to 10. Maggie is like -7. Like, she literally tried to get him out of this. There is no, not only is there no one less culpable, like, she is legitimately like negative culpability. Like, she worked to stop this, Jimmy.
So much so that that's
so
why
many people.
He broke up with her because she was too insistent that they needed to leave because he was in danger. That's why they broke up in the first place.
Insane.
Yeah, he was going to run off, and then he was just like, nah, I got to stop this murder clown, I think.
I won't care about that anymore. I've already forgotten about that. I got more important things to worry about, like my hands being cut off or whatever.
God. And yeah, he's just like so fucking mean to her the whole time. And I'm just sitting here like, but why? And like, why are you so, like, she's the one person who you shouldn't be mad at. Like, there's, oh my God. The only person you could be less mad at is, like, Meep, because Meep is literally incapable of doing something Jimmy hates.
But, like, you know what the thing is, too, that's, like, and it's, like, one of those things where maybe you could be like, all right, he's mad, blah, blah, blah. But then he says to her, and this is, like, kind of fucked up, that's, like, you know, if I was you, I'd get out of here before I get my hands back, which is like, wow, all right, Jimmy, like, Jesus. Because that, like, that kind of goes beyond, like, sympathy, where you could be like, well, he's mad.
No, he literally screams, my hands are in a goddamn jar because of you, which is just, like, so factually wrong.
I know.
Like, if I was Maggie, I would immediately be like, hey, man, I know you're hurting, but shut the fuck up. Like, holy shit. Like, that would be slap territory. I don't care if you're low on blood. I'm slapping your shit.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, 100%.
That, like, not only that, but, like, all the stuff, too, like, preceding that. You know, yeah, Jimmy sucks now, suddenly, but he's, like, our last hero left, I guess, maybe something. God. I don't know.
Extremely
they
air
make
quotes.
Him so awful in this. Like,
they really do.
The second he started embracing the Toledo Code, it was all downhill, but, like, holy shit, they made Jimmy unlikable.
Well, and you, I mean, you kind of expect, like, not expect, but, like, you're, it's kind of like, well, maybe are they setting up for, like, a quick alcoholism arc while we're here or something? But, like, no, they don't have time to, like, redeem him or anything. Like, the show's almost fucking over. So it's like, yeah, all right, Jimmy's just a dick now. All right.
They just need Jimmy to be mad at Maggie, and they need, I don't even know why they need Jimmy to be mad at Maggie because of what's about to fucking happen to Maggie. P.S. You want to kill another innocent woman?
Hey. I know. And then like, oh, and then like, what's the thing he says to her? Oh, that she's like, don't worry, Jimmy, I'm going to make it all up to you. And that's when he goes like, my hands are in a jaw because of you, which again, no. But, like, and she keeps doing that, I swear I'm going to make it up to all these, which, like, all right, I guess. But she does that, like, three times, too, which is odd.
It's ridiculous that they have her be, like, a saint on top of a saint on top of a saint, and then have Jimmy be like, fuck you, and I'm, like, supposed to side with him.
You know what is kind of funny, though, admittedly, is, like, I'm going to make it up to all these, and then she, like, puts, like, rubbing alcohol on his, like, stumps, and it, like, burns, and he's like, ah! Which also, like, I will say, I don't think, like, whoever, like, when they stitch up his hands, like, it's just a big open wound or whatever, but I don't know. So
we don't even know how they did the surgery, quote unquote. They just, like, Jimmy had hands. He got in the fake ambulance, and then he didn't have hands at the hospital. So, like, we don't even, I mean, and apparently he was unconscious because he didn't know they were going to take both hands until he woke up. So, like,
I mean, yeah, fair, but, like, isn't, like, they had to do something so he didn't just bleed out, so it's not like he has just, like, big open, like, cuts, I don't think, but then
I mean, I guess he did go to the hospital. They probably did something to his arms in the hospital.
So they have him, like, stitched up.
Yeah.
It's just they give him, like, horror stitching as opposed to, like, medical stitching.
Right.
So it looks kind of clowny, but
yeah,
then she just, like, is just like, all right, well, I'm gonna make it up to everyone, but first I'm gonna dunk your hands into iodine, so give me them stumps, big boy, it's iodine time.
It's fine, he won't get an infection or anything. Also, he needs his hands to be clean so that something else can happen this episode. Well, it's back at the freak show time, and Elsa is, for some reason, practicing her show in the middle of the day, and the spotlight is not right, and she yells at the person who is doing it, who we don't know who it is. It can only be one of, like, five people.
I want to add one detail real quick that I forgot to mention. Elsa, at multiple points during this, refers to all of the freak show to their face as her beautiful monsters and, like, her monsters, her freaks and everything. It just really bugs me because, like, there's been such a big point of they don't like that.
Right.
And now Elsa's just, like, doing it all the time.
Not only that, but, like, we established back in the first scene of him being like, who else would kill Ethel or whatever, to, like, sow discord so that the rest of the episode makes sense, quote unquote.
Right.
But, like, the other freaks have, like, significant reason to not trust Elsa besides that. Like, before the Ethel thing, they had tons of reasons not to trust her. Selling the twins, for example.
The twins, yeah.
Who will inexplicably be Team Elsa by the time this is over. Also, she stabbed Paul and didn't call him an ambulance, and he almost died.
Yeah, you're right, actually. I forgot about that.
Like, they are not on great terms with Elsa, but they've just, they're like, we forgot about that. But that guy said that he killed Ethel, and though we don't have any evidence to prove that's true, feels right, feels correct. So we should definitely fuck with Elsa.
When we get there, it is killer the things they say, because they are literally wrong in every sense of the word, except for the grand scheme in which they are accidentally correct.
Incredible. Yeah. So she's trying to practice her show, I guess, for some reason. And the spotlight person is not doing a good job. And she says, I knew you were stupid, but I didn't know you were blind, too. And I'm like, ouch. So right? much for yeah. my beautiful monsters, I guess. Also, I don't even know who she's talking to, frankly. But the new guy just dropped. Everybody get ready. New guy. Technically not a new guy.
It is me. Massimo goes to glory. It's Massimo.
Yeah.
It's the guy who made her legs back Yay! In Germany. And it's
Oh yeah.
It's played by the jazz man from last season. Skip it about I'm here to make your legs.
Yeah, that's him. That's him. Massimo the Jazz Man.
And I'm not even kidding when I say, like, the way they expect you to insert this character into the narrative is to literally go, oh, so, like, and Beef, you were mentioning this, they treat it like, you know, Elsa's, like, the reincarnation of the great witch mom, and he's yeah. the reincarnation of the jazz ghost. Because the only way this makes sense is if, like, we assume there's, like, deep chemistry between these two characters that goes back very far and also was never mentioned or talked about.
It's like they're expecting that Avengers Endgame reaction of, like, you know, Captain America bringing everyone there, but now it's, like, Elsa and Axeman together, and the audience just starts, like, going crazy in the theater for some reason.
I'm like, telling
oh
you.
Oh, my God!
I'm
coming!
I am so willing to say that it's not even a theory, that this is just literally what they're thinking when they write these characters, is I so strongly believe that in this specific scenario, and then like in last season with the coochie magic witch, not Violet. I don't remember what her name was.
I know who you mean. Zoe.
Zoe, yeah. Zoe and Zombie Boy, and like in that specific regard, they wholeheartedly know that though this is an anthology, that you are going to associate certain actors, since they are recurring, with certain characters they've already played. And so they just rely on you automatically associating, like, oh, that's the guy who played the Axeman. That's the lady who played yeah. the Supreme. They already love each other because that's they did in the last season. Like, they're just hoping that your brain automatically associates those characters like they do with Tysa Farmiga's characters and Evan Peters' characters. They're like, no, we're not going to have these characters build any kind of, like, rapport with one another. We're just going to hope that you assume that those two go together because they were together in a previous season. And then they just do that in, like, so many of these. They're like, yeah. You would expect that, right? You would expect that character to end up with that character because their actors played characters that liked each other in previous seasons.
And
but it's
for
not
the record,
like...
yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, for the record, or at least not that I'm aware of, in like 14 seasons or however it's still ongoing. I forget what Del. I think actually it's 12. But like, there's no like shared universe that they do where they imply any sort of like reincarnation or anything. Like they seem to be trying. Like it's just sort of like, yeah, like why not have Evan Peters and exactly it's just like a fan servicey kind of thing, but like for who? Because like I feel like by this point, if you are an American Horror Story fan, you're like on season four, you got that with like Evan and Zoe or whatever, and like season three and season one, you know what I mean? Like I don't think Elsa Axeman kind of like has that same energy.
Like yeah, we loved it. We loved their chemistry together. The Axeman, skibbity bop bop bop. We loved it.
We love how he watched her grow up from a child.
We loved that. That was so cool.
God, I forgot about that.
We thought that was really good and worth revisiting. So we did it here too.
So my theory, Slow Beef, was they had just finished playing BioShock Infinite. Oh. And they were like, there's always a girl and a lighthouse in that. We could do that too. And I was doing a bit. American Horror Story Freak Show did start on October 8th, 2014. BioShock Infinite did come out in March 26th, 2013.
The only way I could, you can't see my air quotes, defend American Horror Story, though, is that if they had ripped off BioShock Infinite, it probably would literally have been a lighthouse and a portal, and like,
yeah, there would have. You're right.
They're not good at like references. Like, they just have to steal. That's like the only way it works.
Metaphors God, for fucking, cowards.
How do they do this? How do they keep getting away with this?
So, we meet Massimo, the jazz man, who's here to make legs and hands and stuff. He contributes nothing and will not be relevant in any way, shape, or form. I truly don't know why he's here. I cannot. It's
to tie together Asylum and this season. Wait, I'm being handed a note. We already did that.
Who's the other guy? Angus Jefferson? Where the fuck is Angus Jefferson?
Yeah, where is Angus T. Jefferson? Where has he been this whole time? He was like with Desiree, so like, where'd he go? She was like, sorry, so, I have to kill a bunch of people. I'll be back, Angus. Wait for me.
After this short introduction of Massimo, we get to another scene that I was like, well, I don't want to watch this, which is Dodd and Bette having sex with Chester. I guess they did decide they mentioned at the beginning of the last episode, hey, we're getting into our freak era, but like sex freak era.
Oh, yeah.
Now they're paying that off, I guess.
Great. I love watching this. This was such an engaging 20 seconds of my time watching weirdly CGI'd Dot and Bette's back riding Chester like a cowboy on a rodeo bull.
I did have a moment of, I was like, oh, this is a beast with three backs. Don't see that every day. It's kind of like, oh, okay, well, whatever.
And this, like, you know, not that, because like at one point, like, so they're doing it, and then Marjorie is like, the doll, I mean, is sitting there, right? And I think at one point he looks over and it's the actress, but like, she like, you know, Chester, can we get rid of the doll this time, you know? And like, he has all these like doll hangups and issues, but he just looks over and goes, yeah, sure, chunk, just like knocks her right the fuck over. Like what? We spent this whole like season and show like going with like, wow, he's into the doll, he can't get over this doll, and then he's just like, yeah, fuck this doll. What am I? Who are we kidding? Sorry about that,
also,
ladies. Like, what? Like,
can I say that him having it off to the side of the bed just watching is infinitely better than what happened the first time they had sex where he was holding the doll during sex? Like, this is a major improvement. I don't give a shit if the ventriloquist dummy's in the room. Like, that's fine, I guess. A little weird, but it's way better than him holding it while they're having sex. Like, I don't know why Dot and Bette are suddenly like, I don't want the doll looking at us. Like, why?
Like, God, and there's like one angle this could have worked. And if it was Chester was like, okay, you lady who stole my wife from me, you make out with the puppet. I'm going to have sex with my wife. And like, then it'd be like, okay, so he's doing like a handoff. Like, all right, but no, it's him being like a weird, a little ashamed of it. But yeah, no, literally they're just like, Chester, I don't like the way the puppet's looking at us. Can you please take it off the desk? And he's just like, yeah. And just like cat slaps it off the fucking desk. Like, it's so just without thought or without, it's not like some great like moment of turmoil. He's just like, yeah, bitch. And just slaps it off the desk.
Also, Dick Gang must be absolutely trash from Chester if they can still like register that doll is in the room somewhere and like watching from a distance, because it's not like a dog, it's not making noise, so it's like, this dick is so trash, I sense an inanimate object nearby that displeases me greatly. Someone get rid of it.
Kind of looking over lackadaisically like, oh yeah, the doll.
We gotta get rid of that shit. Yeah, no, he like sucker punches it off of the dresser, which is pretty funny. But apparently the dick's not that trash because they
like a cat disrespecting a glass of water.
Yeah. We get to see three simultaneous orgasms. Great. Thank you, American Horror Story. I don't know that that's how that would work. Listen, I don't know the science behind it,
Yeah, we don't have time to figure out our orgasms per brain or per genital triangle. I don't have time for this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, I don't know the science behind it, but I feel like that's not how it works, because I feel like everybody's brain receives it differently. I don't know. I just don't think that's how it works, frankly. But I don't have the science to disprove it. Checkmate. American Horror Story.
So Chester then goes, okay, you need to leave and go back to your place. You cannot sleep and spend the night with me in like a warm embrace. I need to be with my puppet. And they're like, okay, just leave.
It's puppet time.
It's puppet time for me.
Puppet time for
me. And so he's talking to Marjorie Puppet, and the puppet is mad and goes, I'm gonna leave. I'm mad at you and I'm gonna leave, which is the dumbest threat to have a puppet make.
I know.
Like, a much better threat would be like, I'm going to reveal your secret to everyone, which would be, you know, him being overwhelmed and blabbing it. That kind of, you know, it would be a sign of an inner turmoil. But no, she threatens to leave and leave him alone, which, like, I don't know. If I was Chester, I'd be like, damn, finally. I hate some fucking peace around this shit.
Yeah, the mean little voice in my head that's mean to me is going to go away. That kicks ass. Wait, I'm being handed a note. I cannot let her leave for some undisclosed reason. We're not sure why. We're not sure why I'm so attached to this puppet and can't be separated from it. Okay. I was just checking.
But you know what? The other thing is, too, like, Chester could also be like, you know, not that he would, it'd be out of character, but it's like, I'm going to leave. It's like, yeah, how? You know what I mean? Like, because it's like, can't Chester kind of piece together like, oh, yeah, she literally can't. That's not possible.
Do you mean like how he is forced to confront literally at the end of this sentence? Yeah. Where she's like, she's like, I'm covering for your murder. Don't forget that. And he goes, it was your murder. You did it. And she goes, I'm a puppet. I'm an inanimate object. I can't kill people. And then it cuts to him having a flashback of him murdering his wife and her lover. And it's like, yeah, man, it's a puppet. And like he just like doesn't respond to this information correctly. It's
so bad because it's like a reveal to him. Like, oh my god, I killed them. Like, wait, what did you think was happening here? You know, or again, like it's like one of those things. Like, it's like I could get it if that's what they do, but they're so inconsistent with how this puppet's like doing anything or behaving. Like, it doesn't work. Is he crazy? Is it magic? I don't know. But
and it's not like a weird like obsessed lover thing either, where like the puppet like pretends to be cool and then starts getting jealous, but like clearly is a positive influence overall on most of Chester's well-being. No, like this puppet's just been a fucking asshole this whole time.
This puppet sucks, and he won't, like, there's no reason for him to keep it. Like, God, it's not even part of a magic show. That's like the worst thing of all. Like, it's not magic.
Yeah, he doesn't like use it in his act, which I feel like would have been a red flag to me if I was in the freak show. Like, oh, he does like a magic show and he uses the puppet in it, right? Right?
He
uses the puppet in it, right?
Yeah.
No.
No, that's separate, weirdly. Weirdly enough.
We must have covered it, but, like, it just, like, it's just nothing. Like, ventriloquists aren't magicians, and it's not a circus, but it is.
Also, like, there's so much you can do that's fun with a character that's, like, largely a benevolent presence who occasionally will just do some wild shit or, like, secretly has not been a benevolent presence this whole time. Mm. And they just sidestep that entirely, and they're like, the doll is a piece of shit.
You know.
That's how it's gonna be.
There is like an episode of Tales from the Crypt that was, I thought was the scariest thing when I was a kid, and I like rewatched it recently, and I got this kind of sucks. But it had a really good twist on this, where like the ventriloquist dummy was actually the guy's like conjoined brother on his hand, and it had like his own, but it was making him do things and blah blah blah. And it's like, there's really cool shit you can do. I totally agree with that.
Oh, like, do you mean like the face on the back of Edward Bortrink's head? Oh, we already did that one. Fuck.
Yeah, you're right. But like, you know what? Like, why can't you steal from that as opposed to like Freaks has a good ending? Let's just do it. Like. Fuck!
Freaks has a good ending. Let's just do it. I hope I have balls like that one day. Yeah, you know what? I'm tired. Let's just do the end of Rocky and call it a day. I'm tired. I don't want to write a boxing movie anymore. Let's just.
I'm going to start dreaming, just like, guys, I'm bored. I'm just going to put Arcade Pit in my little window, and you can watch that on my Twitch channel. That's what they do. Like,
oh, God, they're like the fucking XQC just leaving a chair in the corner while they watch a documentary. Yes!
The original React Andes. I can't believe this. I can't believe American Horror Story has been proven to be this way.
That's just how the puppet is, I guess. And then the puppet just goes, hey, I'm going to need you to kill the twins, okay? And he's like, all right, I guess. Like, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. No, and like, goes, and okay. They do have him like
no fight.
They have him like weirdly grovel to the puppet and like put his head in her lap and like sob like, please don't leave me, please don't leave me, Marjorie. And it's like, well, can we get like a crumb? I hate that they give us so many flashbacks, but at this point, if you're making me watch this character for so long and he has so much effect on the plot currently because no one else does, like at least make me explain, or at least explain to me or show me why he does not just simply yeet this puppet and rid himself of it, because she obviously causes him a significant amount of turmoil. Like, yeah. Was she a toy he had as a kid and like his parents died and like so he's like associates her with comfort? Like, is she modeled after his mom? Like, what is a singular reason why he is so like pathetically like groveling to this character, to this puppet? Like, don't leave me. Like, well, that seems like the kind of thing, if you're not going to give us an answer and you're not going to like explore that element of the character, that seems like the kind of thing that would be quote unquote fixed by him getting like a girlfriend, for example. And he has two of them now. So like, you'd think that this specific codependent characteristic he has of like maybe not wanting to be alone or whatever would go away.
Worst comes worst, he'd start inflicting it on his new partner. Yeah.
Or, like, hey, maybe Marjorie would get jealous of the woman or women he's in love with here, like Dot and Bette, and not just random people, you know? Like, we'll just say, but okay.
I think you should just chop whoever goes in that box.
Yeah. It's like, I'm jealous, but I'll take anyone. Who cares?
I'll just take whoever. You cut someone in half.
She's not even in this scene. That's another thing that like I kept noticing. I'm like, so what does he do with her during the magic show? Like, does she not demand to be involved in that also? It's like, no, she behaves if he's doing his magic. Because she's not there. She's not there in that scene. Yeah.
It's, God. Yeah. Damn. I think we should probably like break it there.
Yeah.
For now.
Right.
It feels like it's not a lot, but it's because they really did just slam Neil Patrick Harris in the middle of this show and are like, new main villain. And I'll spoilers. He's not going to be the new main villain by the end of this episode.
Yeah.
Like, who is Angus T. Jefferson? Who is Angus V. Jefferson? Who is this man? Is he gonna be the person who comes back and goes, Desiree, you gotta stop killing people?
We can only hope. Like, that would honestly be truly unironically best case scenario, because at this point he has not affected the plot in any meaningful way aside from just being like, I love my girlfriend with three titties. Hey, I'm Angus T. Deverson. I love saying my full name, including the middle initial. All right, I gotta go. Bye. Like, truly, that would be the best outcome, is that he makes a repeat appearance and is like, Desiree, you, I love your three titties, but you have got to stop killing people. I guess we'll find out. Well, not next week, so. But the week after that.
Jeez.
Yeah. Look forward to learning more about characters and an inexplicable second attempt to tie Asylum to this series, because I am convinced they were playing BioShock Infinite. That's the only way I can explain it. Shit. Well, till next time, everybody, for the next part of American Horror Story. Freak show.
Stoppers,
I hope to
whatever.
Catch you then. Showstopper. Part two, The Quickening. How American Horror Story got its groove back. Till next time.
Bye.